Senate Resources Committee will come to order. Let the record show Senator Zalewski, Senator Paul Fisher, Chair Mulcahy, Vice Chairman Seeger, and myself are present. Today we have, and Senator Dick Lassen, today we have before us the mop-up on the agriculture bills. It is not my intention today to be taking testimony, but I would like those who are here to be available for questions if we happen to go along. Is that, does anybody object to that? Looking first at Senate Bill 337. If you remember with Senate Bill 337, it's related to the Delta Junction Bison Range and specifies that the drift barrier will be placed along the northern edge of the Bison Range, and that was a change that we were going to make in a Resource Committee substitute and increase the fee from $5 to $10, and that's all we've done on that, other than a, let's see, there was a technical change in here somewhere. What was that? Oh, changing the word of not graded to non-standard, and it was advice of DNR that not graded could mean any kind of crop, where non-standard would be a better terminology. So anybody object to that?
Ma'am Chair, that's in 335.
Oh, okay, I got the wrong one.
Yeah.
337 is the one I'm on. Thanks for bringing me back to it. That's all of it then, isn't it?
Ma'am Chair?
Yes.
The one explanation, and I did not do it, was there anything particular in the repeaters? I did not check those sections.
What's it? Oh, I'm on 335 again, darn it. On Section 5 and Section 6, Ned, those two repealers, does anybody knows what those two are right now? So the Section 6 repealer is repealing the time that was established? Is that what it is?
Yes.
We want to make sure.
Madam Chair,
yeah.
Can we have an explanation for Section 8, Sections 3 and 5 take effect August 1st, 1995?
Yeah, 3 and 5 is the repealer. Can you help us out there a little bit? Oh, that isn't that the part where the loans...
See, under current statute, the termination date for the whole bison range program is 1989.
Speak up so they don't hear.
Under the current statute and in the session laws, the termination date for the bison range program was 1989. And you'll see in Section 6, we're extending that to 1995. So we're repealing the sections that spell out the 1989 termination date.
And Section 8 say they take effect, they go into effect in August.
Where's
that's a good
Happy
question.
Moss?
That doesn't.
Anybody here from Moss's office?
It's down here.
Okay, let's leave that one till he's back.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, but
I'm not. We need to know.
No.
Okay, looking then at SB 335. I apologize for not having the answers on that. I should have. That's the grain reserve program, making the grain reserve a revolving loan fund, and we wrote up what we'd agreed to last time, except we changed non-graded to non-standardized to prevent selling junk. Does everybody understand that one, or questions on it? Chair would accept a motion on 335.
Madam Chair, move for remove the committee substitute, the individual recommendations.
With the technical changes?
Well, that
it's in there.
Right.
Okay. Is there objection? So be it. On 338, that's the appropriations bill. It's been unchanged. We're just holding it with the others. The chair would accept the motion on 338. Anybody want to move with individual recommendations?
I'll so move, you, Madam Chair.
Is there objection? So be it. We'll take up 335 if and when Pappy gets here. 337. Looking then at the committee substitute. on the lands bill. We had, all of you had a chance to look that over, right? We have noted the comments and changes suggested. But there were amendments that I thought should be brought up before the body, before we included them in the committee substitute. The first amendment, and it's the Alassen Amendment, has the support of DNR, has my support in it. And what it would do would simply give the commissioner the rights to some number one. Yeah. The freedom of quit claiming claims back to BLM rather than having people have to take it to court. Chair, we accept a motion on that amendment.
I have so moved, Madam Chair.
I would hope you'd move your own amendment. Is there objection?
Okay.
Yes.
Is there someone from DNR here?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
You know, we have evidently an amendment made on the other side relative to the same subject proposed by DNR. And it's rather distressing that we get it at this late date. Is the committee been notified of this language?
I'm sorry, for my name is Ned Farkle from the record for DNR.
Can we pursue this, Madam Chair?
Sure. On the House side, when we testified in favor of the same idea of a bill, we proposed adding language to the bill that would make an exemption for land classified as agricultural land from being, so that we could go ahead and dispose of that land back to the federal government. That has been incorporated into the House bill, and at this point it has not been included in this bill.
Well, the whole point being is, why haven't you got that information to this committee?
We've talked it over with Sandra, and I think we would want to go ahead and include that. It depends on whether if this language is to be included, we would like to include the House substitute language that was adopted in House of Mass last week. I think it's Wednesday, Friday.
Yeah,
We'd be glad to provide.
Would you like to tell me what it is?
We asked in the House side that language be added that would allow the commissioner to reconvey back land under the same preference rate section that had been classified for agricultural use to develop. Otherwise, under 3805321, the commissioner is not allowed to alienate title to lands classified for agriculture. So we have to exempt lands classified as agricultural so that the commissioner can reconvey those.
As well as this?
Yes, ma'am. It would be a supplemental to this wording here.
I'm sorry.
We'll take this bill up at another time.
Madam Chairman?
Ma'am, that's an oversight on our part. I apologize.
I just received this information like a minute ago. But it distresses me that you've done this in the House side, and you know we're working on this bill, and why don't you get the information before this committee, the meeting?
We'll get the House bill wording to you and include that.
Yes, that's the language here, but, you know, it's...
House, I think you say. I'd like the committee to take a good look at amendments number one, two, four, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, and 10, they're compromise wording. Also 12, if you notice those, 13 before we get through.
Madam Chair, just a little bit of, I don't want to interrupt if you're sitting there last minute. Just so I understand, I missed public hearing again. The DNR was very good, I asked for, so I could catch up on where the testimony had been, and I talked to your staff. Am I correct that in this last black book, the committee substitute for Senate Bill 375 included all of the various things that DNR commented on, and they are included in our new bill? The only things not included in the new bill is this packet. Is that correct?
That's
so
correct.
We're all dancing from the same sheet of music.
That's correct.
Now, the matters raised by Commissioner Winneke that dealt with assessment of the needs assessment, and there were four basic issues. my question is, are those included in the new bill?
No, or they're in the blue packet.
They would be all in the
packet. And that's number four.
Okay.
Number four.
Just so I'm sure
I would like to receive your comments then before we draw up another substitute. It's my intention at this point to try to put in one, two.
You are going to be dealing with these.
But we're going to rework this thing. Let's see that we have. I don't want a bill going out of here, Ned, that's just half done. If I have to hold the thing the rest of the time. Now, if there are others that have suggestions on amendments, I'd like to see those amendments, and I'd like to see them today or tomorrow, not later than that. Otherwise, they won't be considered. And the rest of you have questions on any of these other amendments? And we can't finish our work, so let's just go ahead and work. Just go to Wednesday. Anybody else want to bring them? Yes.
Chair, would you like to go through some of the other ones? I think that's the only one, from our point of view, that we haven't looked at for the amendment point of view.
All right. I can't let the temper take me away, I guess. Looking at amendment number two, the idea there is the 25% discount for veterans. I'd like to know your feelings on that. The department has said that if we do that, they need to do away with the veterans discount. Or no, the veterans preference system. That has only been used three times in the whole time anyway.
Madam Chair, I'm getting lost.
Mm-hmm. We all are.
Look at amendment two.
Where's amendment two?
It's in your packet of amendment, proposed amendments.
The blue book.
That one right there.
Okay.
And it's headed number two. You
go with it. It's written number two at the top of the page, right?
Yeah. A circle two. Do any of you have comments on the 25% veterans discount? What is your feeling on that?
Here, it's about four pages.
It's called Veterans Discount. Vic Fisher, Farenkamp, heads the top part of it, and then you have comments. It allows eligible veterans 25% discount on purchase price of state lands. Your comments, please.
Yes, Madam Chair, just a little discussion on it, because it's pretty substantial.
It is.
Impact over a period of time. And I'm wondering, on the veterans' preference, I suppose I'm kind of interested why that isn't being used more often. If it's in there, as I understand it, what it does is just allow the veterans an opportunity to have first crack at properties that are up. I'm wondering if there are any constitutional issues dealing with the veterans' preference that a certain class gains a benefit over others. And I suppose, should we be talking about, you know, dollars that are involved in this program? As I see it, now that we're not able to give residents some benefit, it's a fairly substantial. I don't want to be against veterans. I'm very supportive of veterans, but I wonder some idea of the magnitude of the program would certainly be of interest to
me. Ned, would you like to address that?
Yes, ma'am. The department believes right now that about 44% of applicants who receive land from the state would qualify under veterans discount. The amount of money that would be affected is very hard for us to determine at this point, because we aren't sure of the impacts of removing the discount program as it existed before. So there's no way of really estimating the total impact. We don't think it would be a very expensive program to run, it shows in the comments. And generally, we would like the legislature about whether or not to repeal the preference and the option procedure as well.
As I understand, Ned, that preference has been used three times on three sections. Is there a certain criteria that land meets before the veterans' preference is used?
No, ma'am. It's
used.
Meg Hayes is from the.
Go ahead, Meg.
It's used. It's the reason it's only been used a few times in the recent past is because we've only had a few options. It's used in an auction situation when we're selling residential or settlement lands. And that's the only time that it comes into play, when it's a requirement, it's not an option. So anytime we have an option, we automatically have to have a veteran's preference pre-auction, if you will, if there's residential lands involved.
Paul?
I just have a question. Where do we find offhand a definition of veteran?
Is it still classified here as 5-year resident?
1 year.
It's in the bill.
Yeah, it's in the Senate bill, right to the next page.
It's in. Bill. Paul, it's following that page in the bill.
We believe it's the same one that's in existing statute for existing payment.
Madam Chair, I don't understand that comment. The bill is in existing.
Well, no.
I
understand. In this, these are is the word that's in existing statute today in the last bill as it was now.
Madam Chair, there is a 25% discount on the bill.
No.
No. What did you just
definition of that? 18 years of age, resident for not less than 1 year immediately preceding the date of sale, not less than 90 days of service, honorable discharge or general discharge under honorable conditions. What is the feeling of the committee? Are there other questions concerning this?
Madam Chair,
mm-hmm.
How much money do we make on the land program? What are we talking about?
I don't know what income we have annually for the program. I can find that at supply. It varies year to year a lot, and it's something that we haven't kept track of. We haven't earmarked it in the Department of Revenue per se. I'm sure we can extract those figures.
I think it just boils down to whether people want a 25% discount for them or not want it. Now's a good time to speak up. Senator Bishop, Liza.
I just had one question relative to the program that's in place now. Could you give us a brief rundown on how it works?
The existing auction program?
The veteran's preference as it works, as it applies to the program today, how does that work? Which you're going to repeal evidently.
Well, we won't
obviously
discontinue using it
unless
the legislature repeals it. But the way it works now is, it, as Rick says, if there's an auction plan which involves residential land, we do have first preference sale for veterans.
But that's on certain parts of it, is it not?
On the residential lands.
What you're saying then is they have preference as it relates to getting land here that they have at reduced cost. That's is that the trade-off?
The main difference is that right now, if the veteran's preference means that you're bidding against a fewer number of people.
Right, okay.
Okay, as it's being proposed, that it would be a reduction in the price that you would pay.
Mm-hmm. Right, so then you might win on one hand, lose on the other. So, just we'll take a shot, I guess.
Yes, I think so. No. It wouldn't repeal it unless you want to repeal it.
They wouldn't use it, though. They have options. So I guess if it's more important to veterans to deal with a smaller group and use a veteran's preference there rather than the 25% reduction in what it would cost them. I don't know.
Where do they come from on this issue?
Yeah, we haven't had
much
testimony.
No, we haven't. Except that lobbying for it. Are anybody here representing veterans? As I understand now, that only comes into play on certain land sales, and that's just the auctions, right? On this, it would come to play in any of them.
The definition of veterans in statute now is different from the one that's proposed.
What's the difference?
The current definition is a person with 94 or more days of active service who has been honorably discharged.
That's what this one says.
This seems to have. Oh, it is. Oh, sir.
Any other questions or comments? Is it your feeling we should or should not include this resolution or this amendment? Good question, huh?
It is a good question. I wish, it seems to me that would be more advantageous to be in a smaller group, have a better chance of acquiring land than it would be to get it.
They only use it now in lotteries. This would be used in everything. This is for those bad events.
Almost all of the owners' land holders are in lotteries, and then they're just getting a preference under the lottery system. With this discount, they would get a preference in auctions. They're not a preference, but a benefit in auctions too. So,
see, the one today only goes for auctions.
Oh. Well, I move the amendment.
Anybody object? Okay. Number three was proposed to say an area where regional area plans are underway and are scheduled to be completed within 1 year, actions such as land disposal, which will significantly affect the area, shall be postponed pending plan disposal. This one scares me. We have, again, perception of delaying or trying to keep land from going out. Somebody else may want to speak on this issue or question on it.
And my comment, I guess a question to DNR. You feel that under the various requirements, you're adequately taking care of this right now in terms of doing the planning prior to going out. There have been criticisms in the past and certainly reason for concern. But under the process you use now, you feel that that is adequately being addressed?
Yes, ma'am. In fact, there are several variant plans in process right now. This is in the Tanana and Southeast Highlands area, as well as for Bristol Bay. In each of those areas, we've had an awful lot of focus go into the settlement element of the plan. And we feel that we've been able to proceed with planning for disposals simultaneously with the planning process. In fact, to halt the disposal process while area plans are in their final stages would probably result in basically a moratorium in about 50 million acres in Alaska right now. It could have quite a backlash effect to require the planning to be complete for the whole area. What we've done is to lift out areas where disposals are proposed and try to get more public comment on those specific areas within the whole area plan context.
Madam Chair, I have some concerns about putting this in, but I'd like to ask one question if I may just pursue it. It's a little on the other end. What happens, there's a cumulative impact of these various disposals, and somewhere along in some of the amendments or concepts proposed, we had one about the assessment of kind of annual and cumulative impacts of land disposal. That, I don't see any amendments for that. Is that something that the department does now to take a look not only what you're doing now, but what overall the impact, so you're not looking at every project as it comes along singly? What are you doing in that regard?
We don't have an impact assessment per se for the state. For each project, we try to project what sort of effects there will be from the disposal.
Do you ever go back and look at what you've done in terms of you know, what the overall impact is in an area?
Not by a formal process.
That may be something we should address.
Well, I don't know.
Meg might have another comment.
I'd be interested.
We do that. Not on every disposal, but we do look at them certainly in an area standard, so that we look at the whole Alaska Railroad, for instance, as a place that has several disposals going on there, trying to evaluate what the overall impact has been in terms of available public lands and any impacts on access. And in fact, we have we are working on a proposal that will trace sort of the history of some of our disposals to see what actually has happened over time, to see what the real-time impacts have been rather than people's best guesses as to what they're going to do. So we probably could do more of it, but we are starting to do that.
We'd be interested in seeing some of that when you get finished. Is there anybody that wishes to move this one? And moving on to number four, the proposal would be on paragraph three to either repeal or to amend to say the request of commission under this section shall include analysis and determination that there's a market demand for the land disposal. And as I understand it, the needs demand assessment was being made for the 100,000 acres. Is everybody with me?
Yeah.
I would tend to think that if we can either do the repeal of that assessment or we can put in the language of the request of the commissioner under this section shall include the analysis determination there's a market demand for the proposal if we don't repeal it.
Madam Chair, I would like on the demand assessment, I think, to see that new wording. I don't quite understand why we wouldn't, well, I guess it would give the intent. first of all, I don't think what we've done is has been very useful to the legislature, and it's more or less has been driven by what I would want as opposed to practical considerations as to where land is available and some other things. So I've had some problems with the needs assessment, but I think that obviously it would be important to know that that land that's going out fills some, and not just that we're playing games by putting land out that has no value to anybody. I kind of feel like we're in a bit of a transitional time now where we want to see that the department carries through on some things. I'm somewhat hesitant to throw out the whole demand assessment. I mean, that they need to be looking at that aspect of it. And so maybe this is an in-between step that could be taken now rather responsibly. Is the department, do they have comments on that? As if we put in that amendment?
Senator, we've been in an awkward position in that there has been a change from the quota to a non-quota system now. We want to do what we can to try to comply with or to meet demand, and I think that what you're suggesting would probably be useful in that respect, trying to identify demand and put it in a public statement.
Madam Chair, would this amendment actually do it, because it would keep the other in?
Yeah.
So it's awkward wording that you proposed here. I think that that's as a minimum of what should be done, but it does kind of flies in the face.
Yeah, we either repeal that other, and if we don't repeal it, then we should put that in.
Well, and I'm wondering, but it relates under E, which is not before us, so I guess we need to look at E to see what E falls for, right?
Yeah. E is the direction to the department that their budget request include.
Do all of you understand that if we don't repeal F, we can repeal F, or we can leave F in and put the second paragraph sentence under E.
Madam Chair, I think we need a little more explanation. Could we have what E says?
All right.
They refer to E and not to F.
Paul, you had a question while she's looking.
My question was the staff comment, the last sentence says the process should be examined for possible change next session. Are they in fact saying leave it the way it is, or does this tie in with something else?
I think we need to explain it to the group.
No, if we don't repeal it, we certainly need to look at it next session. I'd like to take care of as much of it this session as we can.
In the intent of that, we understand our proposal to replace section F. So we either repeal it and apply no demand assessment. Instead of the procedure outlined in the correct statute, we would just say.
Well, say it loud enough, everybody can hear you.
Okay. The idea is that either Section F would be repealed or it would be replaced.
With
the wording that DNR has proposed there. That would not be put in addition to what's there. We could either repeal F, so have no reference to a demand assessment in statute, or we could have the simple reference that you see in the third paragraph of that page.
Madam Chair, what's E, Section E?
E says that the commissioner shall annually submit to the governor an appropriation request necessary for the disposal of state land in the land disposal bank that shall be included in the budget submitted to the legislature by the governor. So that request for budgetary funds is to be based on a demand assessment.
Comments, yes. Ned?
We've recommended also a change to 020E that comes later in the packet, Carol. Basically laying out the budget process a little more.
Let's don't talk about the budget now. Let's talk about this.
So it won't be the same E if our recommendation is adopted. But we would feel more comfortable with a shorter and less demanding demand assessment that would be easier to produce and probably more used to the public.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I would move for repeal of Section F and adoption of the recommended wording where it says the request of the commissioner, etc.
Is there objection to that? All of you understand what we're doing? Going to five, proposed by Sea Alaska. They proposed a 99-year, the kind of a, shall we say, negotiated term is the statement of the term of lease shall not be less than the projected usable life of any improvements proposed and approved under the qualification process, and unless the commissioner finds that the public interest is otherwise required. Ed, would you like to speak to that? Or anybody?
We support this proposed amendment in association with the proposed amendments of S75 and S76 that are in the later pages of this packet. And generally, we've had pretty close discussions with your staff to come up with this one.
How about Sea Alaska? Does that meet with your approval? Then Chair would accept a motion, or what does the committee want to do on this?
All right, I need a little bit more information.
I'll slow down.
Okay, we're talking 55 years, and during the period of a leasehold, you can come in and you can add all kinds of things. You can add things up until the very last day before the lease expires. I'd like to know about what is the qualification process? What are we really saying here? It's going to be darn tough if I've got a lease and it's an important one. If I put $100,000 in and 2 years later I come in and my lease is about to expire, for me to find that the public interest requires something else in the face of very substantial economic investment. And so what are we really saying about the qualification process and public interest here? 99 years is a long time.
We might want to address your larger question under the later amendments to the qualification process. But
that'd be under nine.
The length of term, I would concur with you that we should stay at 55 because 99 is just too long to make this sort of decision.
Okay, so we're not doing that. We've got above language, which goes to the qualification process. So if we adopt this, then you're saying that we should discuss this under what qualification process means?
Yes, ma'am. There's a later.
I think that you'll find that as amendment number.
I realize that. Okay. But should, are we now dealing with the qualification process?
No, ma'am. If you don't adopt the 99 years, I think that the consideration of useful life is valuable within the leasing process. So it should not be binding on the commissioner to determine that a length of lease will be equal to the projected useful life, because I think that bar some future uses and considerations that you're concerned about.
Put some real pressure, do you not, on one individual to always maintain that lease almost in perpetuity, depending on the investment of the, say, the one that has the leasehold interest?
The lease is originally negotiated with the lessee.
Sure.
Will include language on this projected useful life. Additions to the improvements within the lease probably would require some new language.
Okay, so that's a part then of the original lease that you're dealing with, a set of circumstances that would be subject to amendment or review prior to the expenditure of dollars. Is that what we're talking about?
I believe there would be.
Well, I mean, I think that makes a lot of difference.
Mm-hmm. There would be subject to a whole new review of if you're adding on to a lease to new improvements. If I'm understanding
well, okay. When you enter into a lease, you lease ground,
mm-hmm.
right, or real estate, and then what you do in it in your leasehold improvements are an entrepreneurial decision of the person leasing the property. Are we saying that those things would be signed off on as we go through the process? I'm trying to understand that.
As we go through the process, they would not be signed off on at the beginning. The lease would be given for a specific purpose, say to build a certain facility in the state lands. We would approve that on the basis of the projected useful life, unless the commissioner decided otherwise. If there were further improvements on that property, those would have to extend the period of the lease, those would have to be considered anew in the new process for the new construction on the lease.
You're sure of that?
Meg?
I think you might have identified a problem with it, because my first reading of it would be that you would issue the original lease for the length of time that you, either 55 years of the length of the improvements, which in, say, 30 years, but then you would be constrained from building anything else in your lease that would have a 30-year life after that, because you'd know that your life of the lease was only 30 years. You might build something on it that would have a 10-year amortization period, but probably not a 30-year amortization period, because the existing statute doesn't allow for any renewal of the lease. So I think that is a legitimate problem that we're going to have to look at.
That's not something we're creating. That's currently there.
The 55-year limitation on the length of the lease is existing statute. But we are not saying that if we are going to build something that takes 30 years, that's all the length of time we're going to issue the lease for under the existing statute.
We're not saying that here either.
It shall not be less to say that he's...
John?
Yeah, Madam Chair, that's... The problem exists now. Anytime that you want to do something that's not within your approved development plan or something that will last longer than your initial lease term, you're going to have to get a new lease. Those new improvements would in turn be looked at in terms of their useful life to see how long your new lease should be for. So it's the problem may exist with this section, but you're right, it also exists with present law. What this section does, this doesn't limit the length of lease terms. It may, in many circumstances, extend them. The problem being from an applicant's point of view that if you have a 30-year useful life structure, you're going to want to amortize it over 30 years. And if DNR only wants to give you a 15-year lease, you'll most likely not be able to get financing, and you may be unwilling to attempt to do self-financing. Anyway, I don't think it creates any new problems. It may not get rid of ones that exist now, but it doesn't create any new ones.
Madam Chair, what it does is tend to perpetuate a lease. And because of the substantial size of the investment, could make it very difficult if, you know, to balance off what might be other public interest things, yeah, where you might want to acquire back. That's the point I'm making.
Yeah, but the point is that you would not be able to rebuild or reinvest or go further unless you had the new negotiations with DNR under this, right?
That's correct. And again, under the compromise language, DNR is not required to use the useful life as the term of the lease. If for some other reason they believe that they want a shorter lease term, if they foresee a change in use in the entire area 20 years down the road, it just uses the useful life as a benchmark, and if DNR wants to do something, they simply get something else. They simply have to put their reasons in writing and explain why they're doing it.
Madam Chair, your answer to the question is that if this is adopted, they do have to come in all the way along to say this is what we're going to do and to get modifications to what their original plan had been? Earlier you said no, and now...
No, I think most of us understood. I think what you have to do is if you want to propose something new, you have to go through another leasing process. And that just because you have a lease for proposed improvement or an improvement that you've already constructed doesn't give you...
Are you leasing the improvement or the land? You're leasing the land.
But for the purpose of whatever improvement is proposed. Because we don't do a lease until we have a plan development.
Land is not just leased. It's leased under a proposal. If they change that proposal or
add a structure that was not in their earlier one, they're going to have to come back. I see Ed's nodding, but I see Meg not nodding.
Go ahead.
Obviously, we have a difference of opinion about what we're trying to do. I don't see under existing statutes any ways of extending a lease, of renewing a lease. And so my feeling is that that's something the committee ought to be looking at, would be, I don't think we want to get into a situation where we essentially create an infinity lease by automatically having to approve extensions of it, but I do think we ought to look at some simplified way of making decisions about it, rather than necessarily going through the whole process of deciding whether we're going to issue a new lease or not before somebody wants to build a big structure on their lease.
Madam Chair, I have no problem with that. I merely want to know, you've got a loaded shotgun, do you have an opportunity to renew that, to renegotiate the terms of the lease based on the expenditure of dollars by the holder of the leasehold?
Would you like to respond to that, John?
If there would be a material change in your existing lease, you would essentially have to get a new lease, in which you would have to go back into the pool of people who might compete with you. I agree with Meg that there may well be a need to solve that problem, but now that's an entirely different problem which has nothing to do with this amendment.
That's
right. And Meg's right that there should be some process to renew or revise the lease if you make changes of a certain magnitude. I don't think there is one now. You would need a new lease.
Madam Chair, the only reason that it comes up now, we are allowing something beyond the 55 years. So, maybe that comes within a different section.
No, 55 is maximum. Up to 55 years.
That within that 55 years is discretionary, and they want the discretion to consider the useful life. You can't go beyond 55 years.
Is that right? It doesn't allow for extension beyond 55 years? If their useful life is longer than that?
You would have to get a If the useful life is longer than 55, the applicant suffers the consequences. If you wanted a lease beyond 55 years when the time came, you would have to get a new lease.
Okay. The useful life goes beyond the 55 years.
55 is an absolute cap.
Okay. I'll support you. Now, are you confused?
I'm not confused. I'm just wondering why CLS would support it.
It's better than what they got now.
Why?
Do you want to answer?
Madam Chairman, we support the language as presented. We understand that there is a cap of 55 years. Our problem is that when we go to the management, the state's management, they have discretion between 1 and 55. We recently had a dock at Kowak where they only authorized a limited period, a 30-year lease, for a structure that has a useful life of 55-plus years. And so we would like the language in here to allow to give guidance to the state's administration that they would approve leases for the useful life of the structure. And so our interest is satisfied.
What you're saying then, Bob, if we had approved the 99 years, you still had the same problem. Without the new language, Okay. Fine.
Madam Chair, I move the amendment.
Speaker, are there other questions? Will we? Okay. Any objection? Number 6 was brought to us by the professional hunters. They wanted $5,000 a year rather than $250, which the NR state more accurately reflects the cost. They also wanted 20 years. We worked out to the 10 years. They also wanted some other things that we didn't put in here.
I move amendment number 6 and ask unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Okay, here we go with leasing again. Number 7. That's the way to do it. Thank you. Equal to any survey appraisal cost incurred by another qualified bidder if a bidder who has paid survey appraisal cost does not become the highest bidder. Whoever got the bid then would pay the others for the work they've done. Anybody want to comment on that? DNR?
Yes, ma'am. We strongly support that because the survey is about benefit to the state. And we believe that the person who does it should be the person.
I move the amendment.
Any objection? Number 8 is pre-qualification bidders. You'll notice this is another one that was proposed by Sealand.
By who?
Sealaska. Excuse me. I've been on the railroad too long. And this gives the commissioner the discretion to require pre-qualification. It's kind of a compromise worked out. Do you support it in this form, C. Alaska?
Yes, ma'am.
DNR?
Yes, ma'am.
Move the amendment.
This is the, if you remember the Tide or Submerged Lands testimony that we got. It's kind of scribbled, but it came out what we needed. It's rather hurriedly done. Yeah.
I'm trying to understand what the last sentence in the explanation is. Under this amendment, if there are no other pre-qualified bidders, DNR would allow the initial applicant to enter onto the land. Does that mean the initial to receive the bid? I mean, to receive the lease? This is a bid for lease.
Oh, you're still on number 8.
Oh, are you moved
on? Well,
yes,
yeah, we're on
number 9 now.
Well, maybe somebody will give me an explanation later.
All right. Would you like to address this one, Ned, at all?
We're on to 9 now?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am. We have a couple of points here. We support the proposal. Would recommend adding a few words to exempt shore fishery leases that are concerned might fall under this amendment. And those would go in.
Where would that fit, Ned?
Right after lease on line 3. It says lease for tide and submerged land. We would put lease, comma, except under 3805082, comma. And we also would amend for the record the statement of DNR's comment at the bottom of the page, which was in reference to an earlier draft, and we've changed that every week in conjunction with staff.
Okay. Instead of, as I understand, it's on first line there at C, under leasee may, would be read leasee is entitled to, and adding, is this addition there? Or
no, just in their comment, but that's just on the record.
Would C. Alaska like to comment on this?
Madam Chair, one language, small language change. Consistent with its original intent that DNR and we have agreed to. In the first two lines of the section, instead of a littoral or riparian owner or lessee may acquire, it should be owner or lessee is entitled to acquire.
Yeah, I just mentioned that.
Oh, I'm sorry, okay. Other than that, I understand that DNR is viewing their ability to issue non-exclusive leases, recognizing that any shared use of the leased land would have to be compatible with the upland owner's use of the land, and that DNR would not be able to force the upland owner to share the use of his capital facilities and improvements. There would be a shared use only of the land. And, DNR has represented that is their view to us before.
Yeah, we have. That's the part, isn't it, Ned, that says the lease under this section shall or may be issued on an exclusive or non-exclusive basis at the director's discretion.
That's right, and we consider it to be within the land manager's purview to decide whether or not an activity is compatible. And certainly, it would be unusual for us to lease two incompatible uses at the same time. I'm not saying we haven't ever
done. Anyone else want to comment on this?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I guess the only thing would be, let's say that I'm the owner of this land and I'm going to be able to get the titlings without competitive bidding. Let's say that you have a piece of land behind me. The only way I can come is to come on those and then go along a narrow shore and somehow get to my land behind, or the land behind mine. How do we protect the interest of those other people that may have to cross that land is one question. The second is this in conflict with existing statutes that allow any preference rights for leasing of titlings? Are we changing the status quo out there? Because this has been such a controversial area, just Thailand's leasing.
I'll ask Meg to respond to that. Okay. In answer to the first one, we try to reserve access easements wherever we can to protect the rights of all owners, not just that Thailand literal.
Well, under this amendment, back to her question, under this amendment, Sea Alaska has the lands neighboring the shore. Ola Sturtzeluski and I have a campsite behind their land. Now, what assurances does this in any way affect our being able to get to our lands?
That, Madam Chair, was, I guess, precisely the reason that DNR wanted to reserve the right to give a non-exclusive lease to protect the rights of other nearby upland owners to get access to the titles.
That doesn't answer your question about how you get across the other person's land. No. I don't think that's related to.
But it gets you to the land at least.
Right. It gets you to the title.
That's my concern.
Yeah.
How I get to do it's going to be.
Color green.
Chair, we accept a motion on 9. Anybody wants to move that?
Yeah, I'm sure I do.
Any objections? Number 10.
I move the adoption of number 10 and ask unanimous consent.
Any objections? Adopted. Number 11, presented by the Environmental Audit Commission, shall appoint a minimum of 3 citizens to the advisory board. You remember the testimony on that? It's feeling DNR and others that we've talked to that they work closely with local governments. Does anybody, Ned, would you like, it is Ned.
Jay.
Would you like to say anything about 11?
Yes, Madam Chair. My name is Jay Nelson. I'm from Alaska Environmental Lobby. Our interest in proposing this amendment wasn't to necessarily create a financial or a sinkhole for money. The parks, state parks now run the advisory board system and cost them very little money. There's no for the for the Parks Board, except for the two specific ones, the Chilkat and the Wicked Expectations State Park. Our interest, though, is in having some citizen advisors for the land disposal program. The DNR's comment that it would be a bother and a burdensome. Any public info will require some burden on the part of the department. Financial burden, we believe, would be fairly small if they don't have per diem payment of any sort of reimbursement for the people on the board. And furthermore, their argument that they are getting sufficient public input from the boroughs, from local government. Local governments have had a lot of trouble with the land disposal program. And that's the borough. The Kenai borough has some troubles with the fiscal 86 proposed land disposals. Sitka had a lot of trouble with DNR over the first three land disposals proposed for the Sitka area. City of Sitka created their own citizens advisory commission to advise DNR on where they would like to see land disposals in the Sitka area in response to DNR's proposals. That would work well for a city like Sitka, where it's a fairly cohesive socioeconomic group. But for cities, say, Anchorage and Matsu Borough, where it's fairly sprawling, we feel that citizens advisory boards appointed or created by DNR would be appropriate.
DNR, would you like to respond?
Yes, ma'am. I think the land disposal process right now includes an awful lot of public involvement. And we feel that we work closely now, and we're trying to repair what is a damaged record as far as a cooperation with local governments. But we are making a really strong effort now to work closely with local governments in finding disposal.
But there's nothing in the now that would prohibit or a town or community from appointing their own if they wanted to.
That's right. And we always encourage that. In fact, this year we had close contact with the Fairbanks North Star Borough as Mayor Allen proposed the creation of such a board within the municipality and the borough. And we encourage that and we'll work closely with that group.
Is there any comment or question on this?
Madam Chair, only I like the idea of having boards, but I see a problem different in the park, and I've really admired the Chugach Advisory Group. They've done some super stuff. But, I mean, there's one park and one location, and people are close by, and I see this as a very large area to be covered, and I just bringing people together and so on. I'm not sure that this would work as it has on the various parks.
Anybody want to propose this amendment? Going then to 12. This is authorizing joint disposals with various entities. It really is something, just authorization for what we're doing right now, is it not? Are starting to shape up to try to do?
We're hoping we'll be doing some. We've tried to do a couple so far.
Move for
approval.
Ask unanimous consent.
Ask unanimous consent.
Yeah. Okay, contract violations, number 13. This establishes appeal process for contract violations. Neighbor, would you like to address it?
Yes, ma'am. In the existing committee substitute, the way it has been proposed, the department would have the power to foreclose without judicial action on someone who's behind in paying the money. What we need is a process by which to do that. And the Attorney General's office has put together this mechanism for us to be able to do that.
Okay. Move for approval, mask unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Well, then, other than number one, we expect something on number one today. Yes.
And Chair, we have the language here if you would just testify to that. You want to give it to us?
What happens in the House bill is proposed is that there's some of the revisers proposed an amendment to the rest of that section. The preference rate subsection of Title 38. Most of what is in the House bill applies to that cleanup. However, there is one substantive change also proposed in the bill that went before the House. That is to exempt agricultural classifications, prevent agricultural classification of land from preventing the commissioner from conveying land over to the federal government. Right now, any land that's classified as agricultural cannot be reconveyed by a commissioner except for an agricultural purpose. And what we need to do is to be sure that there's the power with the commissioner to be able to reconvey that money to the federal government without reclassifying it.
Are there further questions on that?
This just, Madam Chair, this deals, stick with it, with the native allotments.
There are other lands which might fall under this, but it is, the reason we're asking for this is for the native allotments that should go back to the federal government for reconveyance to the Watsons.
I'm curious about the other lands then. I thought we were dealing strictly with the native allotments.
There's, in fact, we've, in the Hess side, we've made a lot, given a lot of background on this. I didn't testify in this bill, so I'm not as familiar with this. I'm Deputy Commissioner Bob Arnold. But there are other cases where federal mining claims or lands within the pipeline corridor, for instance, have been conveyed to the state pretty much in error and which should be returned to the federal government.
Well, as I understand it, then, it would, if there was a... If a vital mechanism for correcting defects in the state's title to lands and in so doing to settle certain claims, including native land claims, against the state.
Right now, we anticipate that almost everything we can see on the horizon is a native allotment. But we do have 10 or 12 cases where we've been given lands in a patent by the federal government by mistake. For instance, they'll convey us an entire township and then realize that they forgot to exclude a mining claim or some other item like that. We want to be able to give that back to them. That's another purpose within the proposal.
Just a minute. Phil?
Yes, I know a specific example of this where a patented federal mining claim, which was conveyed, that was not excluded from the conveyance of the state. And just recently, the person that owned this patented mining claim has been notified by BLM is no longer valid.
I can remember one in particular in Fairbanks too that was a patented claim that was given out by BLM to the state erroneously. They were in court. They've been in court now for 8 or 9 years over a gravel pit in which there are 5 or 6 houses on the thing, and cost the people that had the land over $25,000 in court, and I don't know whether the state's still suing them or not. I was fighting that before I ever came down here, but I can see some instances of that.
That's, we have to go to court in each case now and settle to convey the land back to the federal government. And there are over 200 native allotments that we know are going to come up like that. There are several of the mining plans that Mr. Holdsworth just mentioned that are also been settled.
To summarize, it is merely enabling legislation for them to perform an agreement they've all reached.
That's right.
Yes. There's certainly our procedures they have to go through in order to reach that point. Now we're allowing them to continue on.
Senator McKay.
I'm sure I'm still not tracking what Phil said. If I received a patent from the government already on a piece of land, and then they inadvertently, I would guess, give that land to the state under the...
How
would I lose my position? If I'm in first position with a patent and they've acknowledged that patent, I'm getting mixed up on... Why? They made a mistake, obviously.
The state has to take it to court in order to return it to you.
But why would you have
federal
to
government
take
it?
Because the commissioner, when she accepts title to lands, accepts what the federal government tells her is there. And the federal government has told us we have the whole township.
Yeah, but then the federal government comes back and says, oops, back in 1883 I give this to Paul Fisher, so I made a mistake. And obviously they have to acknowledge the mistake that they're giving Paul title to it.
That's right.
I don't see
a mechanism. Otherwise, the commissioner can't give that land back to the federal government because it's basically a disposal.
Well, basically the federal government can't give it to the commissioner because they no longer
own
it.
But they have.
And we have a patent.
Yeah.
What amounts to a legal
patent. But Paul has a patent. This predates yours.
So we go to court and then we settle. And we give him a patent almost every time, but it costs thousands and thousands of dollars. Otherwise, the commissioner just basically, you've got the problem right there. The commissioner does not have the power to give that land back to the federal government just without arguing. And just say, yes, Senator Fisher has a legal claim. Let's just give you back
and
that
land. That's
the same. That's what...
Should I accept the motion?
The federal government never had the power to give it to the state in the first place.
I agree.
It's like you having a mortgage on my house. You got the first mortgage on my house, and then Paul, a second mortgage on the house.
That's right.
I'd rather be in your position.
But under the Constitution, the commissioner can't alienate that title that she's got from...
Which is no good. State.
Well, it is good because it's legal. You can take it to court and challenge it.
I'll talk to somebody after a while.
But that's what it is. Ziegler, you'll take his case.
I'll take a second mortgage, right?
Madam Chairman, I would move the amendment. The language here and ask the man's consent to make the legislation, which is supported by the DNR. Asked by the commission DNR. Right.
May I ask a very quick question?
Yes.
All right, number one, in the changes you made to the committee substitute, one is with item 5 proposed by CLS to allow an interpolar state land to restrict the use of an easement with written approval of DNR, and I'd like a little explanation of that.
From DNR's point of view, we believe that we already have the power to go back and qualify or put a condition on an existing easement. But Sea Alaska's concern is valid that, for instance, if they have a loading dock or a road on lands that they lease, that they're concerned that public safety might be endangered by traffic or loading activities within an area that the public easement exists in. They want to be able to come back to the commissioner and say, we have large trucks traveling through here and a lot of cranes swinging weight around. And they would like to be able to restrict public access through this part of the easement. And since it's a mutual agreement sort of thing, the department concurs that it would be valuable.
All right. Madam Chair, am I correct that we have put in the ability of the commissioner to waive survey requirements on some of the homestead offerings so that that's taken care of? Is this, the last question would be, is this an appropriate piece of legislation to talk the question that we've all had raised about ag rights and the inability of people to get financing for their homes on it? Is that something that should be or could be addressed in this legislation?
It could be. We have another piece of legislation coming up.
We have legislation coming up that we'll take a look at that. Has that been entered into?
It's in the Resource Committee right now. In fact, scheduled for that.
Is it important?
No, I don't mean scheduled for it.
Oh, you have scheduled it for hearing. So that probably would be better to handle as a separate issue.
That's going to be a dogfight, and I'd rather not have it in the major legislation.
Pretty good bill.
Yeah, I think we do. Do you feel comfortable with the bill we have now?
Yes, ma'am.
Anybody in here that doesn't? Then would you like to see the bill in its form before we take any action on it? Or?
I would like to run it by.
Okay, we'll run it by. Can we have it ready, Wednesday? Don't worry much. We have an explanation on 337.
I'm sorry, would you like a motion?
Oh, we have a... No, we'll wait for Wednesday. We have a statement concerning the bison. We're back to bison. 337, would you like to go through that?
Senate Bill 337, which was the Delta Junction Bison Range and all those sections at the end that looked confusing as far as repealers and effective dates. When the Bison Range was first established in 1979, it was 3 years only. Then the next year, the legislature extended the range for 10 years to 1990. What we're doing in the final sections of this bill is extending it to 1995. And to allow that to happen, we have to repeal those previous sections that had earlier termination dates. And then we're also in Section 3, repealing all the sections in this bill in 1995. So it's a confusing way of extending it to 1995.
But you explained it very well.
Truly confusing.
Does the committee wish to take action on SB 337?
It's the committee's, Mr. Chairman's pleasure.
Let's move it. Get it out of here.
I move the SB 337 individual recommendations and ask Madam's consent.
Any objections? I want to apologize to the committee. I'll have my act together a little better than today.
Madam Chairman, I think you did a great job.
Oh, yes, sir.
Let me apologize for that late amendment on that particular part of the bill. I understand these things do happen.
May I interject my apologies?
My goodness,
I don't think I have anything to apologize for today.
You don't. Okay. And I won't chew you out today. Major.
resolved.